right, everybody, gather round. We are back with another high caliber, action-packed episode of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I am your host, Bryce Paul, joined as always by my good buddy, my compadre, my confidant, Mr. Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing? Hailing from the other side, the other coast of the country.
Bryce, I am doing exceptional. And I'll tell you what, we could not have picked a better time to talk about RWAs and tokenization than today. And what better way to do that than to bring on someone who is pioneering the space itself?
Oh man, I am so excited. This is a personal friend. This is Jim Hiltner, who's the co-founder and the head of business development for an incredible organization called Superstate. Jim, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Also, representing SoCal here for Superstate.
Woo-hoo.
Used to be on the East Coast, but you know, loving life down here in San Diego.
Yeah, no, I'm a really, really big fan of you and what you're doing with, you know, Robert Leshner, who is a co-founder of Compound, who also is one of your co-founders here at Superstate. Superstate just launched very recently. You guys have got an incredible, you know, cohort of investors. You've got an incredible, you know, industry council that my hedge fund Tower 18 is a part of. So just want you guys all to know that everything we say and discuss on this show is not to be intended as investment advice or financial advice. We're just a few guys chatting it up about the industry. And with that being said and understood, Jim, we want to dive in to your background first, a little bit about who you are, what got you pulled into the crypto industry, and then we want to dive into everything that you guys are building at Superstate, and even want to talk about some of the stuff that BlackRock is doing, which seems to almost be pretty much just, for lack of a better word, copying what you guys are doing. But we'll dive into that. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere across crypto these days, which is a major tailwind to the whole space. So yeah, very supportive and happy to have folks like the caliber of the BlackRocks and the Franklin Templetons of the world building similar products. It just goes to show that there's a ton of opportunity in the space. But yeah, you know, I started my career back at Citi, and I had the glorious job at sitting in the back office, just reconciling trade files on a daily basis, and knew my seat was going to be gone pretty soon as technology was just coming across the bank. And from that point on, decided I'm going to stay at the forefront of financial services and technology for the rest of my career. And, you know, I left Citi, was able to join an early stage startup in the equity research space, building out some data for the asset management industry, and spent about 5 years there helping grow the business, you know, the first go-to-market hire, and built that company up where it brought me all over the world. Moved to London for MiFID II and got to open up our offices in Asia as well. It was a fantastic journey. But then I moved into a alternative credit fund where I ran our bank partnerships there, helping get the business that we were running plugged into banks where they could then expand credit to tons of retail consumers that were looking for auto loans or personal loans or credit cards and didn't necessarily fit the risk profile for the banks. But the AI models that that business generated helped them underwrite those consumers and take the risk off of their books. It was a fantastic journey. Definitely a booming time in the SPAC of 2021 era. But
AI was as hyped up as it really was.
it was even before then, right? I mean, it was right time, right place for that company to go public, and has done tremendously well over the last few years. But you know, I always was investing and kind of looking at the crypto space. I fortunately got to meet Mark Yusko back in, you know, 2015, 2016. I was running a charity living in New York, and he was always just talking about Bitcoin, even at that stage when he hadn't really done a whole lot on the Morgan Creek Digital side. But his macro commentary was a big inspiration for me to kind of get into the space, as well as, you know, a lot of the clients that I was facing off with, both on the traditional equity side as well as other asset classes, you know, started to move into the digital asset space. And so I figured, you know, let's take my career that direction. So long story short, I was fortunate to join the team at Compound back in 2022. There's an institutional business Compound was operating called Compound Treasury. At the time, it was, you know, set up to enable institutions to get yield that was spitting off the protocol where they didn't have to face off with it directly. You know, lending to those markets can be scary if you're not that crypto native and have done the diligence to understand how those markets operate. But we, of course, knew how they did or knew how they worked. And so we built a safe on-ramp, if you will, for folks to face off with Compound. Basically lent us $300 million at its peak, where we would, you know, pay interest back to clients with daily liquidity, and we would lend, you know, USDC into the market as a participant on that side. And so really got to dive fully into the DeFi space, but always kept my institutional hat on. You know, was facing off with hedge funds and corporate treasuries and family offices and banks that, you know, were looking to us to kind of understand how DeFi operated. So it was a great, we were the connective tissue, kind of sitting there teaching not just them, but also even the rating agencies. Like, we were the ones that brought crypto to S&P. They now have a big practice there where they're underwriting assets in this space. And we were the first asset that they underwrote.
Oh, wow.
So it was a great experience, you know, very, very different than a lot of the like centralized lending desks that had liquidity issues over the last cycle. But through that process, you know, at the end of 22, we kind of all looked at each other, Robert, myself, and the two other gentlemen, Reed and Dean, who were running the institutional business at Compound, and said, you know, can we do more to bring assets on chain? And tinkered away and brought us to launching Superstate about a year ago. We spun out, created the business. We'll dive into what we're doing at Superstate, but it's been an amazing journey, kind of starting, you know, in the back office at Citibank to here running an asset manager that's on the forefront of tokenization. And, you know, things have changed dramatically over my career, but there's been a common thread all along.
And things are just getting started.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's awesome. And it's the perfect segue into what you're actually doing at Superstate, because we were chatting before this and you all now have $81 million in assets under management. And that's as of today, right?
That's right. Yeah, no, we launched our first product a few weeks ago. But if I take a step back, you know, Superstate is an asset manager. You know, we're built here in the US in a very challenging regulatory environment, and trying to build products that enable investors writ large to get exposure to traditional assets in a wrapper that's a lot more fun and useful than it is sitting on a legacy system. And, you know, everything that we do from behind the scenes looks very similar to somebody launching a mutual fund or launching an ETF, just running an investment advisory business and, you know, pulling capital to give investors exposure to certain asset classes. Mm-hmm. But the difference is, you know, the shares that clients are holding is actually on Ethereum. Our first product is called USTB. It is a money market-like fund. It's, you know, tracking Fed funds rate. All under the hood is short duration treasury bills that you know, actually sit in a bank in the middle of the country. It's under custody in a segregated account in a trust that's, you know, separate from our balance sheet. So it's very, very traditional type of 40 Act mutual fund type of a structure. But the cool thing is that investors, when they purchase shares in the fund, you know, if they're holding assets at Anchorage or BitGo or Fireblocks or even self-custody, you know, they'll be able to hold USTB as a token in their wallets and do a lot of cool things with it. As it's an ERC-20 token, it gives you a lot more composability and programmability than you would have in a book entry share that doesn't sit on chain.
And so tell us about, I mean, on that same note, I mean, what are the other advantages of like tokenized assets? And I kind of want to, you know, have a backdrop of this. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, he came out, he said, the future of markets, of all markets, is tokenization. And so it's a very big statement from the largest asset manager in the world, BlackRock. They also just launched a fund, the Biddle Fund, the BUIDL fund, and they're doing, you know, similar stuff. But why? Why is this the future? What are the main advantages there? And, you know, especially coming from a guy who used to be doing all the, you know, the trade tickets and the back office accounting and all that kind of stuff, you probably see all the advantages.
Yeah, so I mean, there's so many, but I start with you know, the lack of centralized counterparties. And what that does is enable, you know, much more direct interaction between investors that helps reduce some of the risk in the system. You know, if you think about managing collateral as it stands today in the traditional world, you know, there's a ton of work that's done from a middle office, back office perspective to enable the front office to invest and move money in, you know, different opportunities. But by doing so, they're parking a lot of capital in certain venues. That is, you know, a requirement in order for them to be, you know, hedged or to ensure that they reduce counterparty risk. There's a lot of friction in that process as you're moving money from different systems. Not everything is moving 24/7 or at the speed of Ethereum. And so having those wrapped in a token is in a token provides a lot more usability and frequency of transactions that helps reduce the amount of capital that's parked in, you know, certain areas. And so we're seeing a lot of adoption for that use case. I think there's also a lot more on the programmability side when you have assets like this. If you're trying to create, you know, certain portfolios that have exposures in different asset classes, it's typically very cumbersome to do so if you're like a financial advisor and you're trying to move your clients' money around really quickly, especially if you manage money for like 150 or 1,000 clients. Doing that all in a very swift motion takes a lot of work and a lot of people, and it's a lot of slippage. If you have things locked up in a token, you can automate a lot of that and be much more efficient from a, you know, settlement finality perspective when things are locked in a token or wrapped up in a token. I think the other really interesting part of things, which is on the like complete opposite side of the spectrum of a highly liquid money market type of fund, which is you've got all these illiquid funds that exist and illiquid products that exist that are typically just reams and reams and reams of paperwork. It is just unbelievable what it takes to originate, distribute different types of illiquid assets. And so by automating a lot of that through tokenization and providing a mechanism by which the originators of those assets are able to reach their investors through the efficiency of a tokenized programmable smart contract, that opens up the door for them to be able to bring in new investors that traditionally were unable to access those types of vehicles. So it spans such a wide gamut of potential benefits and, you know, very cliche, but like just the tip of the iceberg right now is starting to be developed. And that's what we're super excited about. You know, despite the environment that we're in, which is very much risk on and everybody is loving the momentum of the markets, whether it's, you know, BTC or all the way down to the meme coins, you know, there's still a ton of momentum happening on the RWA side. Mm-hmm. And that's because large institutions kind of see, you know, this potential future. And whether it's asset managers, banks, custodians, you know, market makers, you name it, there is continued development that's progressing that I see, you know, will finally meet the potential value proposition that we've been talking about for a long time. And that's what we're here to help usher in.
Now, how hard or complicated is this process? Like from a user's perspective, is it just as easy to use as TradFi? Because I'm sure that there's listeners out there saying, hey, I don't know how to go and tokenize and code and put my car or these bonds that I own onto a blockchain. But it's really not like that, right?
Yeah, no, I think it depends on the product. And there's also a very wide gamut of different types of products when you think about, you know, tokenization. Yeah. But when you think about the way that we've structured our business thus far has been very traditional under the hood. So that part is difficult and easy at the same time. Like there's a lot of rigor that's put in place from a, you know, infrastructure perspective with various entities and service providers that, you know, enable you to launch a vehicle that investors trust because of the precedent that's been set for decades of how different, you know, funds have been structured. That part is, you know, relatively well defined. The challenging part, I think, is blending the world of a token into that legacy world. And there's a couple of ways to kind of go about it. You know, one is originating assets natively on a blockchain. You know, if you already have a car and you're trying to tokenize that, it might be more difficult than if you're issuing a bond directly on chain as its like first native issuance. And that's where like, you know, the roadshow takes place on you know, a blockchain versus through a bunch of data rooms and, you know, broker meetings. So there's kind of two different ends of that spectrum. For the technology side, there's a lot of development that's already been, you know, put in place in order to launch tokens. And so like USTB is an ERC-20 token. You know, I'm not a technology guy, so I would say it's really, really difficult. But if you ask my engineers who all stem from, you know, Compound and Frax and Uniswap, they can do that kind of stuff in their sleep. It's bringing in some of the more traditional stuff that you have to read off the blockchain and prepare traditional like documents and statements and trade confirms and holdings reports. That kind of stuff is the connective tissue that doesn't really exist today. And, you know, there's a lot of work that's being done there in order to mirror, you know, what's seen on the blockchain and what's not seen on the blockchain. And, you know, that's the kind of systems that you have to create. But once you have that kind of process set up, from our perspective, you know, it enables us to launch a platform of a bunch of other tokens. You know, we can, you know, have other strategies that follow a similar structure now that the, you know, the template, for lack of a better term, has already been built.
Yeah. And the good news here is that the infrastructure is already being built. So, you know, for the people who are out there and they're interested in this stuff, the infrastructure is there, not only from like the decentralized crypto side, right? Like users and projects like yourself are doing this in a very decentralized manner, but also from like an institutional side. Man, they are so interested in building infrastructure for all of this as well.
And yeah. I think it's also interesting that they're using public blockchains. Like BlackRock didn't privatize their blockchain. They're like, we're going to build this on Ethereum. I mean, much like you guys are doing. It's kind of the, you know, a very similar thing.
Yeah, not everybody's comfortable with that. And I think, you know, there will be an evolution over time where folks will get more and more comfortable with certain use cases and applications that will be on public networks. I think a majority of, you know, the demand will come from those systems because that's where the most vibrant developer community is. If you think about launching a token, you know, that's just literally the first, you know, that's step zero of this entire evolution. You know, step 1 through 100 are going to be based off of the protocols that are available on these networks that enable to you to use these assets in ways that you could never even imagine today or in the legacy financial system. And, you know, our view is building in an area where that community is the strongest, where the TVL is the largest, is a great place to start, but certainly are going to be, you know, agnostic in the future, depending on where clients demand to have their assets. If they want to be on a private network and, you know, in a certain system or in a certain on a certain chain, we'll absolutely, you know, listen to the market and help develop solutions in those areas as long as, you know, it makes sense from a business case standpoint. But it is really interesting to see BlackRock put their first tokenized fund on Ethereum. I think that shocked the world a little bit. But it's also a big validation to just the general progression of the regulated capital markets being comfortable with more open networks. And again, there's a whole span of, you know, different opportunities there that are, if you look at Avalanche, for example, they've been doing a ton of work on, you know, their private subnets. And those subnetworks are designed for certain institutional use cases. And, you know, there's a lot of adoption and opportunity there, but that's kind of a little bit of a hybrid between your like totally closed walled garden private chain network to Ethereum. And so there's a lot of opportunity in between to launch products.
Yeah. Let's paint the picture a little bit more for listeners. So your first fund, USTB, it's backed by you know, these short-term government bonds, which are real-world assets, right? The term we've been talking about, RWA, real-world assets. And it seems like bonds are some of the easiest, or not easiest, but it's the first step, right? That's, you know, a lot of these bonds have been tokenized. Ondo is doing it, several others. And I'm curious, you know, you said you could potentially launch other strategies. What's like that next sort of lowest hanging fruit, if you will, for a real world asset to be tokenized and maybe even one day be managed by Superstate?
So I'd actually even take it a step back. And the first tokenized asset was a dollar, right? You've got
great point. Stable coins.
Yeah, you've got $150 billion as it stands today, I think, in USDC and Tether, right? There's The other benefit to tokenizing assets is that you're opening up access to markets that don't traditionally have the ability to invest in dollars or treasuries or art or real estate, whatever it might be. And so I think the first, you know, real world use case has been stablecoins. And obviously there's a ton of use case and opportunities that have been built, you know, through that pioneering effort that, you know, Circle and Tether brought to market. To your point, I think the money market type strategies have been very attractive because they offer two things. One is they offer the same kind of liquidity profile as a dollar, right? If you're in like less than 30 day average maturity treasury bills, if you know anything about fixed income, those are highly, highly liquid. Like you can settle those really quickly in the off-chain world in order to facilitate movement in an on-chain world. So that's super. You know, that's why it's a logical next step. Plus the yield is super attractive, you know, especially in the bear market when leverage was coming out of the system. You know, you have an uncorrelated cash flow to crypto leverage. And it's with the Fed raising rates to 5.25%, 5.5%, you know, that's an attractive risk-free rate to bring on chain that acts as a, you know, way to hedge, you know, inflation and the traditional world when you're not really getting any benefit to just holding stablecoins as a trade-off because you're not getting any yield from those products. You know, the next evolution, I think you're seeing additional risk appetite in the market, and there's a ton of opportunity in the equities world, whether it's a NASDAQ 100, whether it's a basket of miner stocks or crypto native corporates. Like there are certain things that you can create in a similar tokenized fund that we manage to either an active or passive strategy to give investors that kind of exposure because of the correlation benefits, the beta exposure that might complement somebody's investment in, you know, digital assets directly that they want to be able to pair trade or to be able to hedge or whatever it might be with, you know, those types of securities. Then you kind of go further out the spectrum, which is actually happening today with folks like Brevin Howard and Hamilton Lane that have been tokenizing, you know, highly illiquid, exclusive private credit or macro funds that like only the top 0.001% of the world had access to invest in, that they're now creating the connective tissue from originating that fund. Because like I said earlier, if you're wrapping a lot of the process that used to be done through, you know, a bunch of lawyers and a bunch of accountants and a bunch of, you know, legal documents into a smart contract, you now reduce the operational overhead. And so you can take a smaller ticket size from somebody that's maybe a high net worth individual. It's not like an ultra, ultra high net worth individual that wants that kind of exposure. And so these are blockchain behind the scenes, but from a client perspective, it looks like, oh, wow, I now have an investment opportunity that previously was unavailable to me in a private credit fund or into a macro fund that I historically was unable to allocate to. So there's a, you could even go further out and say like art and bottles of wine and, you know, a building and
real estate, right?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff is super interesting. I think our progression will start at the like super conservative end of the spectrum and work our way up the risk curve, out the efficient frontier, if you will, versus, you know, folks that have a ton of expertise on the other end of the spectrum are kind of working their way down.
Yeah. And I want to hit on a point that you just kind of brought up was about how these products like Superstate is building, real world asset tokenization opens up the investable landscape for people, basically giving new opportunities to areas that, you know, never had those opportunities. For instance, like you mentioned, you know, people being able to invest in funds that were really reserved for the 1% of the 1%, now being reserved for maybe the 1%. But what I'm really interested in, and I think what people in crypto are really interested in is, you know, quote unquote, banking the unbanked, or, you know, bringing these investable opportunities to everyone, to not just the 1% of the top 10%, but even just the unaccredited investors. And so do you kind of see a world unfolding where unaccredited investors can, you know, go ahead, they could KYC their wallet that shows, you know, I'm an American or I'm, you know, registered in this country or whatever. And then you could go and you could invest in certain funds and you can, you know, break down those walls that the Jobs Act tried to break down and in one sense, but, you know, can we take it a step further where anybody in the world can start investing in these really high class investment vehicles?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So in parallel to launching USTB, we actually filed a prospectus for a somewhat similar looking fund with the SEC. So we filed back in August, I believe, of last year for the Superstate Short-Term Government Bond Fund. And that looks like a money market fund. There's a little bit of a nuance in terms of the proposed structure of how the ledger of the ownership records are maintained, which is called a transfer agent. But I think we want to push the envelope further in terms of a technology perspective to be able to do more with the tokenization versus leaning too much on the traditional world. All that being said, the goal for that is to open up the addressable market. Right now, Superstate's fund is restricted to qualified purchasers. And that means they have to be large institutions that are investing in this product. We are not open for retail. We would love to be open for retail, but we need to get registered as a security with the commission in order to be able to take those types of investors in. That type of retail access is actually, I think, what folks like Ondo and others have done internationally, where they've built offshore entities that, you know, provide access to things like treasury bill yield that investors in those regions just don't have access to. And so they can do it by going on chain and just moving their money, USDC, whatever it is, into a product that has that kind of exposure and, you know, creates much more access in a, you know, a wider addressable market. It's challenging here in the States, as we all know. I think we're starting to see, you know, folks like BlackRock, as they're progressing with the commission on various opportunities, that and folks like ourselves that are demonstrating how USTB operates to prove why this should be permitted from a, you know, traditional 40 Act type of a structure, which people invest in trillions of dollars every single day. But it's going to take some time. We're not necessarily going to see that come to fruition, I think, in 2024, maybe even, you know, 2025. But we're on the journey. I think, you know, it kind of goes back to my earlier comment about what we did at Compound working with the with S&P to get a credit rating. I think you just need the right caliber of talent and, you know, integrity of people that want to build things the right way and engage in a productive and collaborative way with regulators in order to move things forward. And, you know, we're on a mission to do that. And given, you know, the track record of being able to, you know, successfully get a credit rating for a DeFi company, which people would thought we were crazy when we were starting to do that process. You know, it's very similar where we are today, but, you know, we have a lot of good partners you know, folks that are similarly minded that are also trying to pass those types of opportunities along.
Totally. No, I love it. And, you know, my mind just gets racing, you know, and I want to ask like a question kind of surrounding total addressable market, like how big can this get? But like, I feel like that's a dumb question because it's just like, well, how many, you know, what's the value of all assets in the world? Right there. That's your total addressable market. I mean, you know, how do you think about this when your investors kind of ask you like, Jim, how big can this get? All that kind of stuff. Like what's a rational approach to this idea?
Yeah, well, if you look at today, there's a great dashboard, rwa.xyz/treasuries, I think is the URL. And what they've built is an overview of all of the like tokenized assets in the various ecosystems. I think there's about $700 or $800 million. Maybe it's just pushing $900 million now. You have BlackRock's fund that launched with $100 million in it. So we're getting close to the $1 billion mark of this market. But that's like exciting, but it's also a lot of wood to chop because
yeah, like not even a rounding error on BlackRock's balance sheet.
Well, I mean, if you look at total money market funds in the US, I think there's like $16 trillion or something like that in money market funds today. So, you know, somewhere between where we are, you know, on the $1 billion spectrum and the $16 trillion, I think, you know, we realistically are going to see, you know, tens, if not hundreds of billion of dollars over the next, you know, decade in these types of products, especially as you get larger institutions issuing in this space. The big gating item is from the client experience perspective and from the custody perspective. I think when you have Boney Mellon and you have State Street and others that have hundreds of trillions of dollars, I'm probably butchering their total AUC, but they are very well trusted by large institutional allocators and large institutional investors that don't necessarily feel comfortable putting a lot of their assets into like a crypto native custodian quite yet. Even though like Anchorage has an OCC bank charter and BitGo has done a ton of work with their like Go network and even their trust charter as well. I think that kind of stuff will, instead of the access point for investors being a custodian on chain, it'll be faded off into the background just as it is today, where you're facing off with a trusted counterparty. But behind the scenes, you have one of the larger, you know, banks or custodians that's willing to enable, once, you know, if SAB 121 kind of fades off at some point in time, you know, be able to actually offer services in this space. And because of their reputation and their relationships, that's when you really unlock a ton of capital to get us over $100 billion and towards the $1 trillion mark.
Yeah. And I think what you just mentioned, SAB 121, was that the SEC kind of ruling that a bunch of big banks are like trying to get rid of now? And it kind of makes banks' balance sheets like capital inefficient for holding crypto, and finally have like all these people starting to lobby the SEC that never have before. Is that what you're referring to?
I am. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not an expert, but my understanding is that, you know, the way that the guidance was provided, it was an accounting bulletin that forced banks to recognize digital assets on their balance sheet, which from a capital treatment perspective, just totally eviscerates all of their P&L, because you have to hold so much capital on the side to offset some of the risks. That's what real RWAs are, by the way. We hate the term RWAs. I hate it in crypto, because if you think about it in TradFi, it means risk-weighted assets, which is a very like specific term that crypto natives haven't quite found. You know, we like calling it traditional assets, but RWAs are, you know, that it's a very preventative measure for them to be able to offer custody services and digital assets because of the accounting treatments of it. And I think there's some momentum to rewinding that treatment in order to allow for the larger institutions to offer these kind of services, and banks in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really exciting. And like you said, this has the potential to truly be a multi-hundred billion, if not potentially even a $1 trillion industry. And it's a rather new one. So there's still a lot of people out there saying, man, how do I get exposure to something like this? You know, it's not as easy as just going and buying, you know, the Bitcoin ETF. It's a little bit harder. So like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what are the best ways to get exposure to the RWA and tokenization space?
Probably similar to everybody's first journey into crypto, you know, put a little bit of cash on a Coinbase or mint some USDC in some through some on-ramp. Self-custody or if you're an institution, get set up with a trusted third-party custodian. That then gives you a digital representation of a dollar, which allows you to then start to interact with different systems on chain. For example, USTB, it is a very, very simple product to underwrite from a risks perspective. You know, all of the documentation and legal structure that we built, by the way, is audited by Ernst & Young, and it's sitting in a Delaware trust, and it's only invested in treasury bills, so you can see where your capital is going at any given time. And you know, we make it super convenient for folks that onboard to USTB to just send USDC as their way to purchase. It's an on-chain transfer. It feels very crypto native, and it's designed to be so. But it's less scary than, you know, maybe lending to Compound if you're not familiar with how that protocol works. So I think there's those opportunities where investors can, you know, start to participate. You know, and there's other avenues where you're not required to even to custody the assets. You know, you can invest in these types of products through a trusted third party, and maybe there's an app out there like WisdomTree Prime, for example. You know, has built an easy way for investors to look what, you know, what feels like a neobank, you know, on the front end, but is driven by blockchain behind the scenes. So there's different, you know, grades of opportunities, depending on how much risk or you know, crypto native experience that you want to first dip your toes in the water on.
Yeah, I was at a conference by the TIE in New York, and you know, the question that was posed that I thought was really interesting was like, you know, how far away is it for, you know, Americans, let's call it, in their bank account to be able to see their digital assets or their stable coins. And this person answered, you know, like, that's maybe like, you know, 7 to 10 years away, like at the minimum. But in Europe and Asia and Latin America, like it's much quicker. Yeah. Do you kind of see that like demographic adoption trends play out in your business as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just in London last week at DAS London, the Blockworks event, and the amount of activity from an institutional standpoint that was happening there is just so awe-inspiring. And a lot of those folks are either based in UK or Europe or Middle East. And, you know, so I think that the crypto markets are definitely going east to west in terms of adoption. But, you know, kind of going back to, you know, if you think about Robinhood, I mean, you could buy a bunch of GameStop and, you know, whatever your favorite NVIDIA or whatever it might be, they also offer crypto there as well. And it's the same interface. It's the same type of experience, but it's, you know, bringing the two worlds together where you can have exposures to two different asset classes just from the same application. Mm-hmm. I think Revolut in the UK does something very similar, which is another neobank. So I think that's where that like user interface part of the world is starting to develop. You know, where folks are not even realizing that there's blockchain or crypto or anything like that happening behind the scenes, especially for a tokenized traditional asset like USTB. They think that they're just investing in a mutual fund, which is true. It just happens to be operated by a token. And I think that kind of user experience is going to be critical to onboard a ton of people. It's just the same way that the ETFs were able to get people exposure to Bitcoin without having to spin up a MetaMask or to like go to a crypto exchange and buy it directly with USDC or Tether. That type of stuff is starting to make, you know, people more comfortable, and it's developing directly in their systems. Like, I go back to that other example of like what some of the like alternative credit and, you know, illiquid asset like hedge fund type of guys are building. You know, that's going to be embedded directly in the private wealth channels. So, you know, financial advisors going to look at the addressable market of things that they could put their investors into. And it's going to have an S&P 500 fund, and then it's going to have a Brevin Howard fund right next to it. And the investor is not going to care whether the Brevin Howard fund is on chain and the S&P 500 is not on chain. They just want the exposure, and they'll have intermediaries and, you know, advisors that'll be facilitating those transactions. And it's going to be, you know, crypto behind the scenes.
It's going to be an incredible future. I can't wait, man. And before we sign off, I just want to know what's next for Superstate. I know you guys are hosts of the Superstate Industry Council. Maybe you could give listeners a little debrief on that and anything else you guys got cooking.
Yeah, we are super excited to be working with you guys on this. So the Superstate Industry Council launched a few weeks ago. It's about 20 hedge funds, VCs, market makers, trading desks, prime brokers, that are all, you know, influencers on the crypto industry. And by that, I mean, they're investing in projects, they're trading in the capital markets. And so we're going to work very closely with that community to define our roadmap, whether it's launching on additional chains, whether it's integrating USTB across different venues, or what's the next fund on the horizon? That's going to be a very pivotal audience that we'll look to for guidance in terms of where the demand is for new products. You know, we're really excited to continue to develop and grow USTB. As you mentioned, we hit 80 million in AUM today, and, you know, we got our sights set on a lot more than that. But, you know, we'll have a lot more to announce, I think, in the coming months on where this journey is heading. And the blank space in front of us is pretty vast.
Yeah, no, I'm so excited, man. Really excited just about everything you guys are building, where this space is going, and the fact that we got to sit down here for about 40 minutes and chop it up. Before we let you go, where can people subscribe to the fund or at least learn more? Maybe your social handles, whatever.
Yeah, superstate.co/USTB will bring you right to the fund's website. You can see more information about all that we described on the fund, and go to our homepage there. I'm at Jim Hiltner on Twitter. I'm not the spiciest follow, but, you know, I'll try to entertain you if you so choose. Find me on LinkedIn and, you know, reach out if you're interested in learning more. I always love these kind of conversations.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim, so much for joining us. And you are welcome back anytime. You just let us know. And you've always got a spot here. But until next time, take care and keep building the future of finance.
Appreciate it, guys.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.